All right. My name is Chris Smith. I was the director of this film, and I'm here with
Sarah Price, producer of this film, though I didn't really produce it.
And Mark Borchert, the subject matter.
And Mike Schenk, I did the soundtrack. And also, I'm a second main character in the film.
Second after who, Mike?
After Mark.
All right. So this is just part of a series. It seemed like every time we went to Mark's or he was going driving around, we filmed as much as we could just because it seemed to really show the atmosphere of the of Milwaukee. And this was one of the only sequences that survived actually in the editing, just because it seemed like a great way to open the film with showing Milwaukee.
Yeah, and Tom here, he stuck the whole project out, and that was great because, you know, he had stuff to do with his life, and he kept coming back and allowing me to, you know, to shoot him and finish the project with him.
Okay, right here, this is, I remember, this was one of the first actual scenes that was filmed in Milwaukee. Before this, we had done a trip to Toronto where Mark and I went up there where Mark was trying to raise money for Northwestern that ended up getting deleted from the film. But but this was the first scene, actually the first, I think, roll of film shot in Milwaukee where Mark was getting ready to try to make this radio show happen.
And that motorhome right there is where I love to write in the summer. My folks have it parked there. I wouldn't be in the house or the phone was ringing or anything, so I really dug that motorhome and just writing out there.
People walking around, I wish I could give them destinies, but I have to adhere to this keyboard.
And this is the first frame of film rolled on Mike Schenk. I hadn't even talked to Mike. He looked interesting. He was hanging around, and I remember just setting up the camera on this tripod, and he was standing there, and he just started talking. What were you thinking about then, Mike?
I don't remember.
Any inkling, any semblance of understanding whatsoever. I just made it up. I'm going to write that down. Do you have any?
Yeah, I dug these Halloween shows I made during Halloween season. I'm going to do some more. I just love the atmosphere and being with people and being in that fall atmosphere. That
really makes my day. This was actually the second radio show that Mark had done. He had done one the year before that he told me about. And when we were in Toronto, he told me he was going to be making this radio show. And actually, this is some of my favorite footage of the film, which was strange because I remember it was one of the worst days of filming just because I was doing, at the time I was lighting it, doing sound and filming by myself. And then this was later that night when Mark was delivering the papers. He had been working at the Wall Street Journal for 5 years at this point.
Performances, and I thought, my God, what am I doing this for, you know?
Yeah, I would always get carried away with drinking and doing that stuff while doing that radio show, and that kind of affected the whole thing. But I don't know, it's kind of cool at the time, I suppose.
And I remember actually Mark's car smelled like gas at the shoot.
Yeah, you should have seen dude on his knees puking out in the street, man. Was that a pathetic sight? He was just this little man gripping the side of my car door, man, vomiting out on the street.
Yeah, I got physically sick from being in this car. It just smelled like gas, so strong. And I finally asked Mark about it, and he's like, he didn't seem to notice.
You know what makes me sad, though, about watching this particular opening is that I'm still opening the same bills, facing the same bills, and it hasn't progressed, man, in the last 4 or 5 years now, man.
Amount delinquent, $81.11. Oh, man, resulting in a lien on any...
And this actually, the scene with Mark opening his bills here was the first scene that Sarah got involved in and did sound, which was Roll 13, I think.
Roll 13, that's pretty good.
It was, I know it was.
That's great.
Oh, my God, legal actions. Unbelievable. Man, who wants to be faced with this crap?
Yeah, I can't let bills go anymore. They've cut off my phone again this year. I just can't let bills go like that, man. I gotta get a rein on it.
Kick fucking ass. I got a MasterCard.
Do you still have that MasterCard, man?
Yeah, well, that got maxed out, and that became a problem. It was only $500 too, and the only way they'd give me another card, a different company, was if I paid a whole $1,500 up front. So I'm just kind of like borrowing against myself nowadays.
So this was at the onset of Northwestern, and Mark was going out here to put up these signs to try to get people interested in making Northwestern.
Cool, right there. This sucker right there.
And I remember this day that him and his mother just were traveling around. You know, they were putting up signs all over town at restaurants and libraries and whatnot.
Yeah, I don't think I can do that anymore.
He was always talking, filming, and that he was going to make movies, and so always.
He used to have on his wall in his bedroom, just the wall plastered with
all of a sudden dead silence.
You want to say anything about Alex?
No, but Chris is really cool, man. And there's been a big ado about him wearing that Hooters shirt, and it was just an arbitrary thing.
Yeah, that was the thing that always kind of bothered me most about that. Is that it was at a point in the film where we were really trying not to get involved, and Chris was, he'd gotten that shirt from a barbecue contest because he does barbecuing, and it was just a free shirt that he got, and Hooters was sponsoring it with Brunswick Bowling, and I think the people get the wrong impression when they see that shot, which is unfortunate because it was just a free shirt that he just didn't care what he was wearing. You're going to be in
a junkyard. You know, I don't. To me, this is more like of a performance and an entertainment thing. These production meetings, because I don't think anything really got accomplished, man.
Whatever the hell you throw in the wash. He's like, okay, well, Ken, you know, I'm going to make a movie.
Oh, yeah, there's Kenny Keene, man. I've been hanging around with that dude for about 20 years at least. He was in The More the Scarier, my first horror film. And, yeah, I got into a lot of trouble with that dude through the years.
Scarier, and it was, I was 11 years old.
That's at the local cemetery right there, Valhalla. Beautiful blue skies right there.
The More the Scarier 3.
What was that about?
That was about, we were riding into a cemetery.
That's back when you were really drinking though, eh, Mike?
Yeah, I used to slam vodka like water back then, and used a lot of cocaine, acid, and stuff.
What a joy, though, to edit this, man, with the smashing, just, you know, frame by frame, this attack right there. That was great. Oh, we were just at that haunted house last week, man. I took the kids and my brother, man. We went to 3 haunted bars and then checked out that haunted house, man.
Killer interiors. Right, because you don't know too many people running haunted houses, right? In films, it's ad executives or whatever.
Is this still a potential location for Northwestern, Mark?
Yeah, it could be, but we'll see. But, man, that was a killer haunted house. Two of my kids, man, they started freaking out and they ushered them out of the house. You know, they couldn't take it, man. It was scary this year. Donna's scared as hell, but she made it all the way through.
Dialogues with these great backgrounds, you know, talking about.
There's a bar right next door, and there's a bar right across the street.
And there's Jupiter, Saturn in the back. I mean, this just looks right. I mean, this is perfect. I mean, the way I see it. And, of course, there'll be a whole crowd of people here, so we've got to make, like, a line.
Man, was I talking stuff.
Have a hell of a lot of assistant directors saying, hey, could you step back, like, 5 feet?
I was reading an interview of him, and he's going...
So this is Dean Allen, and we actually filmed with Dean for the next year and a half after Northwestern falls apart in the same way that we followed up Matt Wiseman, the casting director, but it just was getting to the point where there were too many tangents in the story, and so we ended up having to cut... We followed their lives at the same time as Mark's, but much less intensely, but it was some really great footage, but it just was another thing that was making the film too long and too tangential.
Dilapidated duplexes, worn trailer courts, and I've been location scouting.
I see I got a bigger audience at this meeting.
I've already got what's in between my hands, and right then at that moment, people say, "My God, I'm glad I'm sitting here because I'm actually."
I wonder what people were thinking when I was talking, man.
See Americans and American dreams, and you won't walk away depressed after seeing.
Oh, that camera's broke now.
My name is Matthew Weissman, and I'm working on. I'm working on a film.
So this was Matt, and he was, that was great because he was so enthusiastic about the project, but after Northwestern falls apart, Matt went on to make his own films. He had been making them before, but he ended up doing this film of him shaving where he was filming himself, and it was actually some really great footage, but it just, again, it was too tangential.
Yeah, we'd be partying during these auditions.
Take a motherfucking wild guess.
Well, look here. 186-minute phone call to California on prime time? What is that?
They're making a mockery out of my words, man.
Wow, Mike, you got a beard there, man. Mike doesn't have a beard anymore.
No. Well, you will. I'm going to go in there flying, man.
You think this is going to spawn your acting career?
What, having a beard?
Fucking minute phone call at goddamn prime time.
I hate the fucking bill!
I'm calling you to let you know that there is a cast meeting tomorrow night.
That's Greg Markovich. He's cool.
We have to kind of like scrape together, and hopefully everything will collide and we'll make our deadline.
See, I come to the airport.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a great place to go to write right there, man. Just, it's beautiful.
And if you're hungry, it's like tough shit. You know, you can't stop and justify your...
They actually had a great... That bar right there is closed down now. That'd be great if they reopen it. You can see the whole airfield there. You know, it's just beautiful.
Mark, was that your Zephyr?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I delivered papers in. And, yeah, that's it, man.
What happened to that car?
Well, actually, I had another car just like it, and we smashed that car at the drive-in. And when the tow truck driver came in, he was wondering what the hell all these dudes with black robes were doing in my smashed car, so he was a little bewildered.
It's just one of those things.
So anyways, we've been asked, you know, where the idea for the film came from, and it really wasn't ever... an idea to follow somebody making an independent film. It was purely the idea that I ran into Mark, who was just beginning this journey to make this film, and that's basically how it started. And then as we started filming more and more and meeting more of the people involved, for example, Uncle Bill, it just seemed like there was no turning back just because it kept getting more and more interesting.
We filmed for 2 years and then edited for 2 years, so it was a 4-year process.
Yeah, my... Uncle Bill and my dad are two different people entirely, man. Uncle Bill is cool, or was cool. He was really cool to hang out with, man. He just didn't care about anything, man, as long as he didn't use too much of his phone or his electricity or stuff like that.
To pry it loose.
I'll show you something, William. Talk to me.
Wow.
That's
how about
right.
That? Wow.
That really changes my mind, Mark.
Yep, this scene
film,
speaks
Bill.
For itself.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, we can start then.
Wow, I had these meetings all over the place, I guess.
Does this whole all seem like a blur, Mark?
Yeah, I can't even believe all this happened, man, and I can't believe how so much of this has absolutely nothing to do with the making of Northwestern, you know what I mean? This is all superfluous, seemingly.
What Mark's idea of a film, of this film.
So I think Dean was getting frustrated because here the production was taking a turn for the, in his mind, for the worse. He saw, you know, he thought the strengths of Mark, the way that Mark made films was the chaos, and the way that Mark, it was a controlled sort of chaos, and he felt like it was getting limited here.
Night, exterior, night, day.
Oh yeah, Tom's a real professional, but again, you know, I operate in a different way, man. I want to film to me, man, goes along with the way you want to live your life, man, and not like this strict containment.
Film stands now. I'm not really too sure.
Yeah, Matt seems a bit uncertain here.
Kind of have a, we sort of have had a breakdown.
So anyways, after the radio show, that's when Sarah got involved, and basically it was. The crew consisted of myself and Sarah, and we felt like just having two people made it a lot more intimate rather than walking into their house with a film crew and you know, people doing boom and lighting. But it was really, they got to know us just as friends, and I think that made a big difference in what we were able to capture.
Yeah, that's a cozy bed, man. I really like that room.
Man, I got to get some information across.
So this is when a lot of people didn't realize, but you're living in your parents' basement at the time, moved in there to help out with your financial situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing you don't see here is, I remember I shot the scene alone, and I showed up, and this was, I think, yeah, near the end of the production meetings for Northwestern, and when I got there, nobody was there, and so as I was setting up, I thought that it was just such a great end of the end of the line just with Mark by himself, but then all of a sudden this guy straggled in.
Yeah, I don't even know where all these people are nowadays, man. They're like ghosts of the past. But I thank him for helping me out, though.
And at about 12:30, the realization seriously...
I remember actually on this day getting a call from Mark, and I think it just hit him that it wasn't going to happen.
Wow, I don't even remember most of this. This is you got a good memory.
The casting hasn't even begun. The location
seem a little bit lit there.
At best, are you crazy?
This is probably around the time when you told us Coven would take 2 weeks to finish.
Yeah, I don't know where I got that from.
We stopped filming then.
Raw dog, you know, he's pretty tall and crazy looking. I liked it.
He showed a lot of promise as far as schooling, that is, his testing was concerned, not that he was that great.
Yeah, it's amazing how people can really get obsessed with how you do in school as equating that with how you're a human being, man.
He dropped out of high school because he thought he didn't learn anything there.
Well, I didn't, man.
His main asset is really just his mouth, his talking. And he can be pretty convincing, you know, because he's very assertive, very aggressive. And, but what he actually can do, I think that he's just best suited for working in a factory, maybe.
And Alex, at the time we were filming, was also living in the house.
Yeah, that wasn't too cool, man.
But Alex was very quick to go to his room.
But he granted us an interview.
No, no, he was really nice. He gave us an interview. He was always polite and courteous, but he I think he didn't. You know, there's a lot of tension in the kitchen and in the living room, and I think he enjoyed just kind of going to the room.
The long King Colvin.
Oh yeah, he's gonna love all this.
This is ridiculous. We started May '94, man. We've got every F stop known.
This is a good story behind this, about where we're shooting this, or where Chris is shooting this.
Yeah, this is another. Well, Mark, do you remember?
Yeah, this was going to be my location for the speed dealer's house, or where he hung out. And I went there, they okayed it, I went into the bar, they said, yeah, you can shoot. They had a great outside stairway. And so all of a sudden it burnt down a few days later, man, and there's the ruins.
So Mark was supposed to film a scene here the day that we were going to film. And
it was called the Sea Biscuit, wasn't it?
You got it. That's actually where Kenny Keene used to live.
Above the Sea Biscuit, it was a bar, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what ended up happening is we just came out here instead of me filming Mark doing a scene, we just had him talking about what it was supposed to be, but then Mark, in true fashion, just kind of was tangentially talking about everything else, and that's where the scene came from, where the whole idea of standing in front of this burned-down building was to explain that he was going to shoot a scene here.
So anyway, we're out here today to try to redeem it, get these establishing shots for Colvin, and you know, do what you can.
I think you were saying something like, God.
You done something, man.
God raised his hand at that moment. He burned down your location the night before.
He sure as hell did. This is great. This is a subdivision now. This is what I'm talking about. All of these beautiful gray fields in that are being eaten up by the new subdivisions. So this is shot in a cornfield that exists no more, and that's why I want to keep shooting this stuff. Because it's quickly being eliminated.
Making a movie, we are one time.
Mike, you want to talk about yourself there?
Yeah, well, I don't really know what to say about that. I'm just talking. I liked the part.
Wait a second. This is a case in point, Mike. This drive-in that we shot in, it's gone, man. I was delivering the Wall Street Journal, and all of a sudden, it ended at the drive-in, my route. And one morning, it wasn't there no more, the screens. It was really amazing, so I'm glad I shot at that drive-in. Sorry, Mike.
Got to make money back on Colvin. So when I did these figures, 500, 1,000, 2,000, and 3,000 units, right? I said, check this out. Fuck this, man. I'm sorry for
you know, I'm really in my own world, I think, a lot when you shot me.
Well, you were really determined.
Oh, I still am. I'm going to get those 3,000, man. You can count on that.
You still have that board?
Yeah. Actually, there's so much writing on it now, it's hard to erase all of the back print, man, so I had to get a new board. The ability to make Northwestern. Oh, that's Mike. That's you playing the guitar, Jack.
Yeah.
We're going to be in Northwest Productions' name in 3,000 plus interest.
Do you want to talk a little bit about this piece of music, Mike?
This is a four-page
fugue by Johann Sebastian Bach. I have about 2/3 of it memorized right now, which I can play with my eyes closed, and that's the point of having me blindfolded playing it later on in the movie, because I wanted to show people that I could do it blindfolded. I'm working on memorizing the other third of that Four Pigs fugue.
Man, this was an unholy extraction getting this account started, man.
What was the idea? Talk about the idea that you were trying to convince Bill that it's his account.
It is his account, and all I needed was an account that had Northwest Productions on it where I could put the checks that I got for the selling of the videotapes. It was, there was no hooligan or hooliganism involved.
And I don't think that's what we meant it to be, but I think some people take it that way, that you were bringing him to the bank to try to get something other than... No, I don't think... It doesn't come across that way in the film to us, but I'm just saying, I think some people think that, you know, you're taking Bill to the bank.
Oh, really, absolutely not. I've never taken Bill to the bank, except for that time, just to open up an innocent little account with Northwest Productions as the name.
And that was so you could take checks for Coven orders?
Yeah, yeah. So people didn't think I was ripping them off, having them write checks out to Mark Borchardt, man, and then cash them at the bar or something. You know, Northwest Productions, it was legitimacy at that point.
Well, that's the whole deal, man. You got
those cold, wintry gray days, man. I love them.
You ever think about that?
I am here because...
Did you call Bill a cynic?
Yeah, yeah, there's that pervasive cynicism. What the hell?
Hey, man.
Oh, yeah, Hero is trying to cast, you know, extras and all of that stuff, calling up the local rummies and that, man.
Sure about that, Charlie?
I think some people get confused that you're talking to Mike and you're just calling him Charlie as a phrase.
Well, that works too, man, but at least Mike would be there.
All right, dude, you got a pen? Can you get a pen?
Yeah, I can't believe I'm going to have to go through this process again, man, for another 2 years.
And you basically know how to frame shots?
I guess. No, not really.
But I mean, if you would see an action, you would kind of like centrifugally focus on it being in the center.
Yeah, Mike, would you centrifugally focus on it?
Yeah.
And fuck it, man. I think my mom's going to have to end up going out in the woods. I mean, it's just one of those things.
I have my shopping to do, and
It's the last day I can shoot. All of the extras have just fell through, man, except for Mike Shank right there, all right? You gotta help me.
There you go. You're a hero,
yes,
man.
I have so much to do.
And I'm doomed.
What am I supposed to do?
Just stand there.
So, Mark, was your mom generally receptive to helping you on these?
Yeah, I think she just, well, in the sense that she knew, man, how desperate a situation I was always in, man. So she was my mom.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we had to shoot the scene 5 different times over 5 different days, man. Something went wrong all the time. Whether a camera possibly freezing or it got too dark when we got there, it was a disaster one time after another.
You should explain where these woods are. I mean, it's hard to find a patch of woods anymore.
Oh, man, these are beautiful woods. It's Menominee Park out in Menominee Falls. And I go here to write, too, man. And we go walk around the quarry, me and the kids. Either you bring some coffee out there or you bring some beer, and it's just beautiful. In fact, I got a scene in my next film I'm going to shoot out here by the quarry.
I'm just going to go wide on you.
I mean, that was one of the best things about making this was you always mean to get out to the woods or go out and walk around, but by filming Mark, we were forced to go out there. It was so kind of breathtaking to be out there.
Kenny, can you please put that soda...
Oh, yeah, those robes, man. That was an ordeal, making them, going out to find the material, begging people, yelling at a couple people, please, you got to make these robes for me, man. What an ordeal.
This is also the day where the camera was jamming. Our camera was jamming, right?
This is when I dropped a lens
in the snow.
And I put it back on our camera. And if you look very close at the scene, especially on film, you can see that there's bands of clear and there's bands of fog. And I was convinced that the footage was ruined by the end of the day, just because I remember looking at the front of the camera and cleaning the lens and looking and noticed that after it had fallen in the snow, it was put back on the lens, and there was some warmth in there, and the condensation made the actual lens fog, and so it was
It was also still wet. It was so hard to get it dry.
So this is when your car still ran.
Yeah. Finally, it just ended up in the driveway. My dad started getting mad, man, and they towed it away.
I remember that was actually, it was what it was, but at the same time, I was always disappointed because that car had so much character.
You know, if I had a second chance, I would have never have gotten rid of it. And I just got Bill's money just when that car was being towed, man, where I could have just parked it anywhere. Damn.
It's going to look like this, man. It's going to be flatter, a lot flatter, less obnoxious than this.
He wants to have the good life eventually. He wants to be.
No. Let me amend that. That's not what I really meant. I want to be able to pay bills, not bruise my legs on coffee tables and stuff like that where you're walking into everything. That's what I mean. Not to have mansions, but yeah, pretty decent house.
This is one of my most favorite soliloquies of yours, Mark.
I'm not that turned on by it, but I guess it's good, especially when I say that and throw the paper. Like a scrub.
Can you talk a little bit about the papers and how they've...
Your paper route.
Oh, yeah. I've had a paper route since I was 12 years old, and, man, I just couldn't get into that 9-to-5 stuff, so I'd always be going looking for paper routes. And this particular paper route out in Menominee Falls was so beautiful. It was at night with no traffic, no cars, listening to the radio, throwing papers, man. I lasted for 5 years, man. But then not sleeping at night just wears you down after a while. Oh, and there's my ex-girlfriend Joan in a junkyard.
Asking for a junkyard. There's actually several.
You got to know her through the production, right? She came to the meetings too.
Yeah, absolutely. So she was cool, and it all worked out because we had something in common, you know, and that's what made the whole thing good.
Oh, she's helping on the film, man.
And if he's able to even do 25% of what he says, it is more than what most people accomplish. He's got a goal and he's going after it one way or another, and he's going to achieve it.
Don't push me, you.
Oh, there's Dawn, Stevie, and Dara, man. Yeah, I love those kids.
Happy birthday.
Hey, little Demi.
No. You are on, Tom.
Hey. What do you say?
Like I say, man, you want to turn the TV off. You don't want the television to rot their brains, man. It's the worst thing of all.
I don't know, from what Mark tells me.
And Mike, where'd that shirt come from?
My ma painted that shirt. She's an artist. She's been painting for a long time.
Yeah, your mom makes some good shirts, man.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not broken off.
And how did the junkyard factor in the Northwestern?
Because the lead character in Northwestern, the guy in Northwestern, the alcoholic, the writer in Northwestern, works at a junkyard, and junkyards are so atmospheric, man, and beautiful. So I thought, let's put him there.
And that little clip of them walking was actually from, we went out to a film Mark was going to watch, I think it was Dawn.
Yep.
In a race.
Oh, that was a disaster.
And we got there too late, but that's where that was from.
And here's Uncle Bill's trailer court, trailer number 13, which they since have taken away into the sunset. Yeah, going over to Bill's, man, that was great. Dude was so mellow.
The world is yours. What are you doing?
And this is where Bill wouldn't let us use our lights because he was afraid of that it would cost him too much when the electricity bill came.
And the phone was always a hassle. I can't even technically understand how all you could have was a $12 phone bill, and he'd still be bitching about that. I'd do the Irish jig, man, if I had a $12 phone bill.
Well, good news, Bill.
But he saved everything. I mean, he was a miser, but he saved everything. Your mom gave us a tour of his refrigerator. He still had cans of
beans. Oh, those are
beans.
Yeah, collector can
from
beans
the
now.
60s
yeah.
And 70s.
Yeah, those are collector's items now he had in his fridge.
How did Bill get his money, Mark?
He worked in construction, and he just saved it, man. He didn't spend anything, man. He just saved it. So it's just kind of accrued interest in just by putting it away.
And what was all the stuff in this place?
All of this paperwork and weird odds and ends and just... I don't think he believed a word I said here.
I think he says that. Actually, no, it was on a different take. This was like a 10-minute conversation that was great between them, but we disexerted this one one clip here, but at the very end of it all, I remember Bill looking over at Mark and said, "I don't believe a word you said."
It's healthy skepticism.
Yeah, that's what it is, Sarah. Healthy skepticism. That's good.
Red or white wine? Red or white?
Red or white?
Yeah, now you're thinking.
It was always great going over to Bill's, though. It was just such a great time.
Yeah, I really dug going over there. That was cool.
That's me playing a song that I wrote called Hopping on Mellow Stones. That's the only original song that I used in a movie.
Wow.
That was a blueberry muffin that Don was pounding into the clapboard.
I remember you getting mad, Chris, because that dude was using all the colored gels, and even though it was a black and white film, screwing up your schematics. Oh, yeah, here comes the infamous cupboard stuff.
All this time completing Coven, when this is supposed to be...
So Dean was no longer working on the production, but he was... Oh, that's where our negative cutter, if you look really closely, she accidentally cut one of our shots in half, and so there's a jump right there. But, yeah, Dean wasn't really working on the film anymore, but he would still show up once in a while to give his support.
Bill looks like a producer here.
That's what he was.
Yeah, I don't know, unknowingly or knowingly, you got me. Boy, that boy just didn't believe a thing, did he?
But he always showed up.
Yeah, that's good. That's what counts, man.
He always was with you.
That's what counts.
He was in the woods with a Coven robe on, wasn't he, running
yeah,
after you?
Yeah, you know, I don't even know how that came about, man. That's a long trek in the woods.
We finalized the kitchen, get the props set and all of that stuff. We're ready for Tom's close-up, and we got to keep moving, man. We got to move.
Oh, yeah, you can see it's summer there. You can see my skin has been sun.
I always was wondering on here, Mark, it seems like you're tan. It seems like it's backwards.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's a weird thing to talk about, but you're right.
A little bit more and just make the best of it that you can.
I was actually looking at the storyboard here. I hadn't looked at it since yesterday, and it refreshed my memory about
poor Tom. He's been through this before.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how it feels to be on the receiving end of getting whacked into a cupboard.
Wasn't he supposed to have a beard in this scene?
Yeah, there may have been a problem with that, too. There just was a lot of weirdness and continuity.
Hope that we got right the first time.
Mark. Mike, take it easy. Not go through
hey, man, what the fuck's the matter with you, man? Man. And you didn't... Oh, you did follow.
That's my parents' kitchen right there.
Yeah. We didn't move out?
No.
Okay, we gotta move out, man.
Right.
You want to talk about acting and directing at the same time?
Yeah, that was really out of control, man, because there was so much out of control elements behind the camera... that I couldn't control, man, and that was a trip, man.
Now this was in the basement, which everybody gets confused between the basement and the garage.
Yeah, you could almost buy that that's a garage, but that's our laundry room.
Man, I just found them. That camera will be silent.
Yeah, the reason why I'm sitting or standing there drinking is because I like to get alone and away from everybody and get a little bit of peace.
That's me listening to a Bach tape.
I'm getting set up for the last shot. I always give a finite time that I'm going to end so I can get out of here at a reasonable time. But I'm also aware that it's kind of Mark's dream to finish the film, and so I try to strike a balance and, you know, not split too early.
Well, thank you, Tom.
There's the door that Steve, Tom Schimmels, is going to get his head put through. I put a few scores in here to...
Has Kenny scored that before?
He
scored the boards the last two times you filmed it, right?
Yeah, I believe so. So there should have been some prior knowledge to the depth of the scoring, man.
It was a thicker board.
Yeah, I mean, I feel sorry now in retrospect for the dude. Oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah, he cracked that, though.
I wonder why you made him do this again before you tested it.
Well, I think that I figured he got a little bit more closer to breaking it, but man, that didn't happen. Yeah, Tom, I'm sorry, man. I didn't really mean that. See my knuckles bleeding right there.
Yeah, you don't. What you don't see before this is Mark hit that like 10 times in a row.
This is gonna be like take some shit.
Oh, it seems like the boys are getting it right.
Kenny never seemed to apologize about that. He just thought something else was wrong.
And the scary thing about it, he could have hit some of the water pipes, man, which they ain't gonna break.
Didn't anybody measure that?
Yeah, I just dumped Hershey's syrup on that dude, man. But in black and white, it looks like blood, man. And if it gets in his mouth, you can lick that off, you know?
It was in his ear, right? Didn't you have to give him Q-tips to get it out?
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty much like blood in color, too.
I can't believe there's so much talk about the pronunciation of the title of the film, man. I never got that.
Well, the funny thing was that while they were doing the spotting and continuity for the film to be translated in other languages, they called me up and said, I'm sure there's people out there that think Coven is an incorrect pronunciation of the word, but it's actually an acceptable pronunciation. It's just the less used one.
Damn right. There's something cinematic about it. It's like, oh, man, there's the cemetery. Since I was 14 years old, that's where I'd be filming, and I tell you, whether it's gray skies or sunny skies, you know, just to go out there with your camera, grab some beer, and just walk around, man, and frame all these shots or be with your friends, man, we got chased by the cops with spotlights through there, all kinds of stuff, man, climbed on top of the morgue in a mega rainstorm, all kinds of stuff.
Old man, they'd start coming after you. So you'd get out here into the cemetery with your beer and your film camera, and you were one with the world and equal with the world. It was a vast work field.
You'd always say that he was going to become a millionaire.
How far was the cemetery from your house?
Oh, it's only like about 6 blocks or so.
Because envious of him, it just made at least me anyway just feel kind of sorry for him, pity him that he felt that way.
I actually think Alex's interviews function really well to give kind of the counterpoint to some of the things that were happening.
Oh, absolutely.
That's Alyssa, that's Mark's, the mother of Mark's kids, someone is slicing up there.
Dawn of the Dead and Night of the Living Dead and Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
The thing I didn't like about this, Mark, was in that, I mean, the thing is that you don't do things, you know, by route.
Wrote. Route or wrote.
Anyways, but in that list of films, you mentioned three horror films, and I think that, you know, other times I'd heard you mention so many other influences.
What are your other influences? I mean, Wells.
Oh, yeah, Wells, Polanski, Scorsese, Woody Allen, Fellini, Bergman, and Kubrick. Yeah, I'd be doing some crazy stuff, man.
This is my favorite of all the older films that Mark shot, I Blow Up.
Yeah, this was a trip, man. This was so gross. I shot it in Kenny's basement, and that's a calf tongue flying out of my mouth, man. I picked up at the grocery store. That was sick. I wanted to vomit all over the place. I don't even know what I was thinking. We yanked it out with a fishing line, man, to make it fly out. I mean, I'd probably get high a lot back then, though, too.
Your kids just said that you took them to Apocalypse Now.
Oh, yeah, man. You want to start them right off the bat with the right stuff.
Say my dad, he's not around very much.
And there's Chris making some familial comments and that.
A little excitable.
No, Chris is a good friend of mine, man. He's, you know, we get along really good.
And he just moved back to Milwaukee?
Yeah, absolutely. 10 years in the Air Force. That's why he has short hair back then.
So basically, when we were filming, it the first year was pretty sporadic. It was maybe once or twice a week. But then once after the head into the cabinet scene, it really picked up, and we were filming almost every day, if not every other day.
Was completely withdrawing from the family.
This is about in fall is really when it started to pick up, and from here until the end of the film, it was really full time.
What wasn't in the movie, what I wish would have been in the movie, is where I won $1,000 on a lottery ticket one time. I won a 200 once, I won 105 times.
What was the total, Mike?
The total, I'd say at least 3,000-4,000.
That you'd won?
In winnings that I've won, excluding, of course, what I lost.
What did you lose?
I lost, well, actually, there's probably a very fine line between winning and losing, so fine that it doesn't really matter, it doesn't, you know, matter to take the energy to try and quit.
But it's better than using drugs or alcohol, because when you use drugs or alcohol, especially drugs, you always lose.
I think some people think that's an ironic statement.
I almost died from a $4 hit of acid one time.
How long have you been straight?
4 years.
What? How does your sponsor gamble?
No, yeah, dude, you're in so many anonymous groups, man. You're pretty well anonymous these days.
Scratch-off problems?
Without being a nose, there'd be no way I'd be straight today.
What do you owe? How much do you owe? Oh, dude. I owe like 10.
Yeah, I can't believe I was just looking at tax problems again a matter of days ago.
$1,500 to the IRS.
Yeah, the IRS is really going to be pissed this year.
You're coming out of it, though, a little bit, aren't you?
Yeah, I gotta learn, man, to jump on these bills and taxes and all of that stuff. Well, I hope they're not going to be that pissed.
Said he won't give Mark any more money?
No, he said this is enough now because he owes him so much.
I'm not interested.
Yeah, I was borrowing bits and pieces of cash off my dad just to order a roll of film here, a roll of film there, man. So, but he helped out.
What people don't see, too, is that we were going through a similar time. We were running out of film a lot and having to piece together some money to buy the film, but we never processed it till after we finished shooting.
Okay. I don't know.
This is cool that you had that in here with the leg stabbing and that. I got a pair of my jeans and that, stuffed it with newspapers and in like a hard cardboard roll to contain the mass. And there's Kenny Keene, man. Yeah, I think we used like flour and water on his face and just let it dry and took him out to the cemetery.
Is he supposed to be a zombie?
Yeah, something like that. A dead cretin, something like that.
Oh, yeah, suck. Let me unbend it.
Hold on. What was the name of the Leaf movie?
Oh, A Grave Mistake. Yeah, I still have... Well, I can't finish it now, man. It's just 20 years later, but I would have liked to finish it.
This story about how I met Mark.
Yeah, you know, I don't even remember that.
I remember it very clearly. Because no one else would drink vodka. Everyone wanted to stick to beer. I wanted to drink vodka, and you wanted to drink vodka. That's how we became friends.
Yeah, I cut the hard liquor stuff out, man. I'd be blacking out before noon, then getting back up in the afternoon and drinking again, man. It's just not right.
Yeah, we'd share a fifth of vodka and just slam it, and Alyssa would get so mad at us. I remember one time she was so mad that she's pushing Dawn when she's a baby down the middle of the street screaming at Mark for drinking vodka.
And here, this is really serious. I had nobody else to help film, and my little boy Stevie had to do that. So this was an act of necessity, man, having the kids help out.
But you've been priming them to help you as they get older, right?
No, they have to, man. Man, I brought them into the world. They owe me something, man.
Because, you know, I won't marry her because Joan's around. I mean, she's living...
So, but, yeah, I mean, now that they're growing older, they can help... carry heavier stuff or, you know, help...
set up lights. Have you set up lights?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm dead serious, man. You don't spend your days lazing around in front of the TV. They got to help out on this stuff.
I told her that.
And I'm telling them, man, you know, that's the deal.
Have any of your kids expressed an interest in doing anything like this?
Yeah, here and there they have. But I think as they mature, man, they can formulate that they're true, what they truly want to do better, obviously. As we move ahead in life here.
So it's like if she can't... Remember,
I changed them diapers and everything, man. They're going to help carry the camera around once in a while.
I can't even believe she would say shit like that. I mean, that's crazy. I love my kids, man. And I want to be a good father. You know, I'm trying to get all this shit done.
What's that, Chris? I remember that when we started the scene, it wasn't that big of a deal because we walked outside. But as it went on and on, because you talked here for a while, it got really cold really quick.
And your mic dropped.
Wow.
It was around your stomach. I was just wondering why it sounded so muffled.
Bill!
So here's Thanksgiving.
Yeah, this always seemed... No, this is good here with Bill.
Bill had these songs, right?
Yeah, and actually, Chris is still making me go out to the garage to look for the songbook, and I still think I have it somewhere, but our garage is so messy. You know, 25 years of garbage in that garage, man. We can hardly park a bike in there. But I'll find that book, Chris, if it exists.
Can you talk a little bit about his songs?
Yeah, Bill would be writing songs, man, in that trailer, and that which was really a trip. But
they were love songs, right?
Yeah, he was always a romantic at heart, and be writing love songs in that trailer.
So he had that book was Three Songs by Me.
Yeah,
was the name of it, and it was it had three of these songs. So that was one of them that he sang for us. And the other one, I think, if I remember, it was called Hatsi Tatsi Nagasaki.
Yeah, something like that. But it's
they're about all his girlfriends. I mean, he had many girlfriends,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
he's sort of a ladies' man in his day.
Yeah. And but they'd be bitter romances, most of them.
I loved all the stuff he had in there. It was just so cinematically, it was so interesting to look at.
Again, we couldn't use lights in his place. He wouldn't let us use lights because it would take up electricity, which costs money.
And there's the corner liquor store.
And so then Bill got schnapps there.
Yeah, he got schnapped up all right.
This is your first time making a turkey.
Yeah, I never made turkey or food before, and I started getting really hammered in this scene, man, as you can tell.
So where did everyone go? You were...
I don't know. I think my parents went out to eat. I mean, they would not hang around with me. You can count on that. I wonder whose little car that is, Chris.
That's Sarah.
That's mine.
Wow.
And that shot was grabbed out of the window as they were leaving the front window. Yes, I would. Well, Mark and Bill were sitting right to the right on the couch.
What would you like, Aaron? Well, I'd like to have a peppermint schnapps with Sprite and ice in it and two gobs of it.
That mixing stick he has with the shark taste. Right there, or that fin right there, we've had that all of our lives in the liquor cabinet for like 25 years. When I get home, I'm taking that blue shark, that mixing stick out, putting it in my bedroom so it doesn't get lost. I really have fond memories about that mixing stick.
Willie, you ready to take a bath now, man?
Yes, sir.
This is one of my favorite scenes. To me, I think it shows that you really care for Bill, and you're the only person who would be giving him a bath or washing his clothes.
Yeah, actually, this scene doesn't strike me as being that psychologically dark. It's like when I was arguing with my parents or swearing in my parents' kitchen, really drunk. That's the dark scene that freaks me out.
No, this is beautiful. You're caring for your uncle.
Right. You know what, though, makes it dark is that sense that I'm intoxicated. There's a darkness toward that in me. It's not like a fun intoxication.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because it's nighttime. I don't know.
I think you're done here.
No, you've got to do my back part.
Well, you gotta lift your back up. What am I doing? I'm washing Bill's clothes. Fucking.
I mean, there's really nobody else to do that for him, right?
Yeah,
he didn't wash his own clothes.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically correct. I think people have these really. A lot of people have these really homogenized motives. Like, they don't go outside that periphery. Like, nobody's gonna clean somebody else's clothes, you know? But man, don't you like clean clothes yourself, you know?
Peppermint schnapps?
Yeah, well, that was his idea.
She probably was taking this a little bit better that you guys were here that I was drinking. You guys were probably a good buffer in a lot of situations.
I'm monitoring. What's that so funny about that?
Come on, both.
Yeah, man, he showed me some wicked-ass toenails. I remember as a kid, man, I didn't even know they could get that bad. They were wicked, man. He ought to have used some of that money just to at least to get a new toenail. They probably could have done that kind of stuff, you know.
And after the bath, Bill was here taking a nap.
Because his clothes weren't dry.
Right.
Your smiling face. Yeah, what the hell you got to say for yourself,
happy
man?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, man. What do you have to say for yourself?
Nothing, really.
What do you got in that bag?
Soda.
Soda?
Yeah.
Mike, what were you thinking?
You
I was just thinking that Mark was really drunk.
Yeah.
And that I just walked into a situation where Mark was really drunk.
Do you find it funny because you're laughing?
Yeah, I found it kind of funny because Mark's always giving me a hard time about soda, you know, and it's so hard to accept that, you know, people think that I have a problem with soda when they're all blitzed on alcohol, you know.
Yeah, have a seat, Bill. Dinner's served.
Huh?
Yeah, Kenny Keene is that take charge kind of guy.
Head of the table. Your executive producer. Okay, Bill, what you need? You need some cheese, corn.
potatoes, turkey.
What do you think Bill's thinking there? Yeah. Where are his clothes? Put me in my pants, at least.
Yeah.
But if I remember, they were still drying. It just took them a while.
And Mike, didn't you have like 3 Thanksgiving dinners that day?
I had 4 Thanksgiving dinners that year. I had one at home, one at Mark's house, one at Mark's girlfriend's house, and one at the AA club where I go to.
Dude, I see great cinema.
Man, I can't believe I get smashed like this, man.
There's something good anyhow.
Bill's the one on the floor, though.
I remember this was another case where we were so low on film, and it was just so frustrating because we had shot the beginning of the night, and we had like maybe, I remember it was like 60-foot short end that this commercial company had given us that was years old, and that was what that was on, but it was kind of like we had a minute of film left, and it was and that was what we got. But it was frustrating just because it seemed like the night was still going on, but this is as much as we could get.
Face up to who I am and shit like that, but I can't. I don't know.
Yeah, this stuff to me is rather dark stuff, man.
Well, this is when you hit bottom. I mean, I've never seen you this bad as this particular night. I don't think you really see it in the film here. But what happened was I went down to say goodbye to Mark, and he was just sitting there, and he was at his lowest that I had ever seen him.
Depressed.
Yeah, just really depressed. And we quietly tried to set the camera up behind him. And actually, we didn't even have our camera at that point, and so we loaded Mark's camera and just set it up behind him and just started rolling while he was telling us what was going on.
Yeah, but all your ideas.
This stuff about the where the ideas come from has been a sore spot with Mike, so I'm not going to really bring it up, Mike, all right?
Yeah, okay.
But in reality, man, this is caused to some harsh argumentation over this Black Sabbath song. Is that correct?
Well, it's actually not a Black Sabbath song. It's actually, I use one word from a Black Sabbath song, the word insane. Mark implicated that I was stealing their whole song.
Not that you were stealing.
Word for word.
Not that you were stealing it, but, well, again, like I said, it's nothing to bring up here, but it's like, you know, I disagree, and maybe someday we can just play those two songs together.
Right.
What was the name of the other song, Mark?
Am I Going Insane?
What was the name of Mike's?
Was I Going Insane? See, he doesn't even think it's funny, man.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mike, it's just commentary.
Well, on the positive side, here's when you're saying you were so depressed and the only thing that put a smile on your face was Mike.
Yeah, that's right, Mike.
Yeah.
Mike, did you notice that Mark was feeling down here?
I don't remember. That's too far back.
You know, like I'm thankful that I won $50, you know, the other day. Thankful.
You seem like a really mellow fellow here.
Yeah.
Thankful for all the food that I've
been. Yeah, we got to whisper because my parents would always be telling us to shut up.
And
we'd
Alex,
sleeping
too.
At night. Oh, yeah, man.
He was on his banging on the...
Oh, banging on the door.
I didn't even want to wake up tomorrow morning.
Yeah, what a tense situation living at my folks like that.
I'm thankful that Mike came over and he put a smile on my face. Talking this shit.
That's you, Mike.
Yeah.
Let's see what winter brings us here. Oh, yeah, this is footage I shot for Northwestern about in 1990.
Oh, yeah?
And, man, I wished I would have finished that film then, man. What an accomplishment that would have been. Well, I got a second chance 10 years later. We actually used a homemade dolly for this. I kind of like this shot.
That is really, really, that's really, really cool with that handheld with the wheelbarrow, but it's going to be smoothed out, you know, but at least I was out.
You started shooting this 6 years ago?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. And I felt it many years before that.
And why'd you stop?
And that's shooting inside the junkyard right there. And
I
then
think obviously there's got to be some fear, like if you actually go ahead and do
see,
it.
See, this is what sucks about filming out in the sun. You get this really bright spots and hard, dark shadows. That's why I like shooting with gray skies. It's that beautiful, even, diffused light.
In this living room, watching something for 6 years ago, and that shot.
And I think the scene was included, too, to show that you had started this years before. This is something that you've been working on for a long time. You already had some footage, and it was just a matter of trying to finish Coven to get the money to get back to that.
Don't stop till I say cut. Roll it.
You feel like you had to remind yourself what you were going through all this for?
As in Northwest?
Watching some of that footage.
Yeah.
I cannot be dead center in the frame. In front of my sight of vision, that should occupy more of the frame than the back of my head.
Okay, yeah, I remember telling people time and time again how to frame shots because they had never used a film camera before or understood about framing, man. So I just would pull people aside and draw pictures. This is how you, shoot a scene and stuff like that. Because I, a lot of times I didn't have people that had done this before.
Cut. Am I framed up?
Yeah. Oh, now I see there's a frame there.
Yeah.
See, man, my hair's all messed up. Well, I guess that's good, though, because it's a fight scene.
Why'd you do this over again? Because of your glasses?
I think one time I had my glasses on. Oh, yeah, that was a big disaster. I shot all this stuff with my glasses on, and what a mess.
Your face is, you're more above you.
And nobody'd care, man, because if I'd be shooting with my glasses on, people would be drinking and partying, and they're the continuity person, if there ever was one, would be partying, and so it... Glasses on, glasses off, man. Nobody cared, man.
See, you got out of the frame several times, and then you jumped in again. Gosh, it's so uncomfortable here.
Did you turn the camera off?
Yeah.
But I didn't say cut. Now, cut.
Excellent.
Okay.
Okay. You want to roll this, honey?
Yeah, so I just, like, anybody I could get, man, I had shoot the film, and then I'd line up the shots sometimes for him and then get in front of the camera.
Good morning, Monica. Mark just wanted me to call to let you know what was happening. Right. And then we're going to come over by you and finish something up over there, something with the car.
John came and Alyssa was here and left.
Oh, yeah, this is always a dark scene.
Yeah, I remember this. I was filming alone this day, and it was I just remember thinking, like, it was a really low point for you, and it was one of the few times that Sarah wasn't there, but I remember just trying to capture everything with the sound recorder on my side and the camera on my shoulder, and just it was just such a pain in the ass that day, and it just seemed like everything was going wrong. It was started out so it was just you were going there to get this last shot of the film.
Yeah, man, I don't want to go through dark times like that no more. I'm sick of all of that crap, man. I want my life to be happy, at least, for more of a majority of the time. Yeah, just grim and dark, man. That's all I remember about this stuff.
What are you doing here?
I want to have a cool girlfriend, man, cool times, and none of this crap anymore.
That'll be the last take of the...
But you can never predict life, man. Ain't that right, Mike?
You know,
right.
I don't know. I get the, kind of weird to do.
Wow,
that.
Living at home in your parents' basement, totally broke, trying to make a movie, having all of this stuff go on, man.
Would it be cool if I took a cigarette break? That'd be cool. Yeah. All right, thanks. It's between sitting on the air.
Wait.
Okay, alright, okay.
Cool. Actually, that should be in the DVD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how Mike goes through movies. Don't you rate them with how many cigarette breaks you have to take?
Yeah.
Oh, between... Alright.
Okay. So anyway, my mom's taking a photo of the last day. I think I just saw those photos a number of weeks ago. I never saw them before. I'm glad we got that. You know what, though? I think, seriously, that everybody goes through ups and downs, and this is just a part of life, but you do what you can so you don't knowingly get yourself into those situations. Maybe that's the lesson of all of this darkness in these scenes.
I don't think so.
So there's another running theme of this whole film was just Mark. The only thing he took time out to do was to watch the football games, and it was the Packers were the underdog that year, so we thought it was an appropriate running theme of him watching the Packers as they went on to win the Super Bowl.
You get settled now.
Yeah, here's me doing some ADR work.
Okay, Robert, you ready?
Yeah, Robert's a really great guy. He really stuck through this whole thing. He's helped me out on so many productions.
He's a trained theater actor, right? A thespian, yes.
Oh, there's the family looking in the amusement.
Additional dialogue recording.
Additional dialogue recording.
When the original dialogue recording while the camera was running is not good enough because of camera noise or extraneous noise, you must re-record it in a more subtle environment.
So this got to the point in the production where we were over at Mark's house just sort of hanging out for hours and hours and hours. We would spend, you know, up to 12 hours more towards the end, but this is when Mark started just really going full-time, so we had to go full-time with him.
The whole day, staying overnight, boom.
We're doing what?
Yeah, it's unbelievable, like that whole editing process now, how many months and months and months and months it took. And that's where we do it, right there. And it's great to have friends like Mike and then my daughter right there keeping you company. I mean, there's nothing like it in the world, because it's just a lonely, cold little room you're working in.
And how did you get access to the facilities there?
Well, just taking a class, you know, and for the prime purpose of just using the equipment.
It's my second favorite scene in the film, because I can actually do, that's two-thirds of a four-page fugue by Bach that I can do with my eyes closed.
I did that myself, man, on the word.
What was around your eyes?
That was a blue belt, a blue karate belt.
You know, Mike, I could really use your expertise. Remember.
Because you're a blue belt, right?
Yeah, in Taekwondo and Kenpo Goju.
Oh, well, this is definitely a sign of voodoo.
Why is it a sign of voodoo?
It's an unnatural cross.
Yeah, that's
Mark.
The editing room right not there. Like, and actually, what had happened was we'd be in there so much, other people wouldn't even reserve time there anymore. They just let us have that room, man.
The boss looked at me in the eye and said, Mark, I hope this is the beginning.
Yeah, and I hope no one takes this wrong when I'm talking. It was great, the guys I worked with at the cemetery and all that, but it's just not what I was going to do for the rest of my life, man. It was great to work there, but no way. So I don't mean to bring any offense to anybody here.
Give this a handful of weekends, man, and it's out.
Well, I had a lot of time to think about things, man, when I was vacuuming those hallways, man. It's like an airport, like concourses. I mean, there were so many of these rooms I had to vacuum, man. It was a trip.
I remember they didn't let us use a tripod in here because somehow that would have made us professional, and they didn't want us to use one, so that was balanced on my leg.
That is steady, Chris.
Yeah.
This was a real pain, though, because during the summer, you had to come, after you were done from work, you had to come back and close the gates like 3-4 hours later. You had to close the gates when it got dark out. So I worked here for 1 year.
A little confusion about these flowers.
Yeah, well, Chris and you, Sarah, are showing a little of the romantic side here or something like that, but unfortunately it's cemetery flowers.
It's a thought that counts.
Yeah, I guess ultimately it is, especially when you can't afford something like that.
They just have bulbs.
Right.
So did you take the flowers or were they...
Oh, no. I don't know. Somehow somebody must have looked at those flowers and said, I don't know what these are doing, where they came from, and I probably said, hey man, can I have them? And they probably said, yep, just take them, otherwise we're tossing them. There's the kids playing around with the Steenbeck. And the rewinds.
Hey, now watch out, man.
Yeah, that was great that they'd sleep over at the editing room. What a great comfort to have them there.
Shit, all I can see is purple land.
Yeah, and I was just riding around with Donnie, and she said shit again a few weeks ago without even realizing it.
If I'm hearing things, I'm going to sleep. I never hear you.
Poor innocent young girl. Dirtied by the world.
Did you?
Huh? No. Did I?
Yeah, you did. I just wanted
to do. Were those the sleeping bags that you were leaving down there?
No. Yeah. I don't even know where we got that stuff from. I think that sleeping bag may have been Jones. I don't know even. That's what we slept on. I wish I would have kept that stuff, man.
That last night exterior always bothered me because it was actually an exterior from the summer. But we just didn't have anything from the winter at night, and so we had to throw that in there.
Wow. My dad has always had a host of recommendations for what career...
Man, I must have been working in that room for a while, man. My hair is all greasy and everything.
Remember, this was a really... technically, it was strange, because this was the one time we did an interview. We always use this 9.5 lens, which was a really wide angle, and this, I remember... It was the only interview in the movie that was handheld where we used a 25mm lens, which was a closer lens.
Filmed, and I says, man, maybe I should just get a job and quit this film. And he's like,
yeah, I'm glad I never quit this film, though, man, because,
you gotta get it done.
Man.
What's the relationship between your
parents? Somewhere by your house, actually,
yeah,
Mike.
That's where I live now, right in that area.
They never got along. I mean, since I was around.
That's Silver Spring in Milwaukee. Silver Spring Street in Milwaukee.
Yeah, that's in a city. You keep going west on Silver Spring, you get out into the beautiful countryside.
Give them a destiny and they've got
something. This was what we had rolls and rolls of this drive, of Mark driving down it and us and him talking and just shots out the window and spring, summer, winter, night, day.
Yeah, all in all, we had 70 hours of footage,
yep.
105 hours of audio. As you said before, we're just going full-time. Wherever Mark went, we went.
Yeah, and this woods right here, Pike Lake, is beautiful. That's about 40 minutes outside of Milwaukee, and we go there for walks. There's a restaurant we go out to eat to a lot, and it's just beautiful out there. That's why I could never handle living in the city 24 hours a day.
Chris brought up a good contradiction in this scene.
Yeah, you're out here trying to get this winter exterior, and it doesn't work because there's no birds. But in the summer, you said it's winter, and we got to cover up the windows so you don't hear the birds.
Yeah, that is wild.
Again, though, that's like typical of it happened in our production the same way. Things just keep, you know, you're trying to figure this stuff out as you go along, and then you make these assumptions, and then things, you know, you learn the entire time.
How you doing? He said, who else is here? Yeah. That's you, Mike.
Yeah.
Tell him we have to do it now.
I'm getting my ma on the other end of the phone to convince Bill, man, to do this additional dialogue recording.
Okay, thanks a lot, Ma. We'll see you around one. Yep, bye-bye. Okay, we gotta do one line for the film. No one can hear you say, it's all right, it's okay, there's something to live for, Jesus told me so.
When am I gonna eat my dinner here?
Can you give him some...
It's the one shot where you can actually see a boom in
there.
Yeah.
So we can record this one bit of dialogue here.
Oh, I still have that painting, man, right there. I'm going to frame that. Bill made that. Mike, what the hell was that sausage?
That was like some Polish sausage or Italian sausage or something.
Here, Bill. Get him a soda, Mike.
So why were you doing this, Mark? Why were you capturing the audio?
Okay, because what had happened was that when we shot this scene initially with Bill in the pickup truck, we had a camera truck in the pickup truck, and there was so much noise going on, you couldn't really hear Bill's dialogue, so I had to re-record it. It's the opening scene of the film, and it has to be clear, much clearer than it was the live sound.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Bill was too down with this cause right now.
It's all right.
Okay, cut. All right, man. Shit. You got to give it some passion, too, man.
I wonder what the hell Bill was thinking this whole time.
It's okay. There's something to live for. Jesus.
And that was your TCD, Mark?
Yeah, in fact, it doesn't work anymore because I was so tired one time. It just, I knocked it over a little slightly and just went right on the floor and stopped.
Jesus told me so.
But Mark recorded all the sound on cassette.
Yep, with a sync sound cassette.
It's all right.
And then we were using a DAT machine.
Okay, cut. You got to bring passion to it.
The boom that he's using is one that I had used for a while until we got a new boom. And isn't this where we were running out of film, too, at the end?
Yeah, so...
This scene got pretty long.
There's no way we could have predicted Mark was going to be doing 32 takes, so around take 16, we really, started just trying to guess when it was going to end, and luckily we got that, I think, take 32?
Yeah, I think we went... I think there was more than 32 takes, though.
Because you want to keep filming, because you don't want to miss anything, and yet you're about to run out of film, you want to pick your...
Yeah, it was really hard. It's like you had to guess. Again, it was another case where we were running out of film. So many of these scenes were like that, but it was, you know, you wanted to catch the last take, but you never knew when it was going to happen.
That's why we kept the audio running, though.
Right.
It's okay.
Okay, that's fine. You got to watch your teeth, too, because they clack a little bit when they loosen up in the mouth. And take 10.
Hell yeah, one time I think my mom got really mad at Bill because Bill put his teeth in her drinking glass or something, man. Something messed up like that.
Jesus told me so.
I always thought this was... I never even thought about it at the time, but we were recording Bill at the same time, and even though you had done it, it was too loud that we could have just given you our track.
That's right.
But this is one of those things. But it wasn't that we didn't want to give you the material. It just was, there was this accepted...
Separation. Yeah.
It wasn't even an option. It was like you had to get your material, and
we had our material in there.
But I didn't even think. I didn't even realize that until the editing. Did you think about that ever?
No, I guess not, man. I kept trying to get takes there, Chris.
Sound like we knew at the time.
And it's like the whole room is just filled with.
This is where I tell a story about how I almost died from $4 worth of acid. My ex-girlfriend Laura. But one of her friends got me this acid, and he said if it wasn't for the downer that was on the blotter paper, I would have been dead.
Is there anything in the story that we don't hear?
I don't think so. I think I tell a whole story. It's just like I was planning on getting some pot, and Laura's friend said he could get me some pot, and he asked me if I'd rather have acid. And that that his friends made it in their house, you know. So I said, sure. He thought it would be a good idea for me to get acid because he said it advances you faster. And so I said, sure, I'll take the acid. And then, 12 hours later, I woke up in the hospital, you know, and found out I almost died, you know.
So you got a second chance.
Yeah, I was only about 16 there. I could have been dead from $4 worth of acid.
You got God looking after you or something?
Yeah, I guess.
Checking my pockets for the acid, which they analyzed one hit. It turned out to be a blotter of paper dipped in...
Hey, Mike, can you tell the deer story?
Oh, yeah. One time I was cutting through the woods to get home at night, and I heard something behind me ruffling in the grass, and I looked behind me, and there's a deer following me about 10 feet behind me, and I turned around, and I sat down on the grass... And at the same time, the deer sat down on the grass right in front of me, about 10 feet in front of me. And we were sitting there staring at each other for about 5 or 10 minutes. And then I got up to walk back home. And at the same time, the deer got up and walked back into the opposite and back into the woods. And the ironic thing is that the next morning we had 3 deer on our front door. And the weird thing about it... is the deer walked the opposite direction of my house when I left the deer, and then next morning somehow him and 2 other deer found my home, and they were all on our front lawn. My mom called, the place is called Haven Woods, she called Haven Woods and told them that we had some deer on our front lawn, and they just said that they were their deer and that they'd find their way home.
And didn't you have venison?
Yeah, then I always felt bad about eating... Well, Sarah doesn't eat meat, and I always felt bad about eating venison after that because I figured it'd be like eating one of my friends, you know.
Oh, no, that damn liquor store again.
It's almost like the day before Christmas. That's right.
Oh, gosh.
Look at that. Right. First play. That's it. Game's over.
I'm already close up.
I don't want to take no phone calls.
That cracks me up.
Can you describe the dynamic that was?
Yeah, I mean, here I was in the kitchen having this great party with myself, and those dudes are in the living room all stoic in that.
Oh, I'm going to go work at a, I'm going to work in a factory. Oh, yeah, that's cool, man. We're going to drill holes together. Here, man, come on in.
Well, when you're drilling holes in a factory, it ain't that funny, man.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hey, you know what?
I won $200 today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with that $200?
I don't know. I gave $100 to my dad, and I got $65 at home in my room, and I got $20 in my wallet. So if you can think of something we can spend $20 on, maybe we can
spend
it.
What we can spend $20 on? About 4 pitchers at Jim Mitchell's.
My mom had actually asked me to keep most of that $200 at home when I went to Mark's because she figured that she didn't want Mark borrowing money from me to buy beer.
Yeah, that's what we are going to see now.
We're going to Jim Mitchell's.
No, are you
kidding?
Yes, we are. I'm not going to any bar.
Well, maybe this scene isn't as dark as I thought it was, but I don't think I'm going to behave like that anymore in my parents' kitchen.
But I'm not taking you to any bar.
Do you have any memory of this, Mark?
No, not at all, really. Just
I remember it real vividly.
What do you remember?
I remember that you were pretty drunk and you wanted to keep drinking, and the Packers had just won the Super Bowl, and you wanted to go to Jim Mitchell's and have more beer, and your mom was, of course, against it, and you just were like, you were really drunk and you were extremely determined to go to Jim Mitchell's and get more beer.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I never made it.
And every bitch-ass motherfucking factory worker is going to go down like that to your bitch motherfucker.
Yeah, my dad don't like swearing, man.
So we always say that you're sort of addressing the rest of the world a little bit, or you're trying to address the people who are trying to put you in a pigeonhole you in some.
There you go, Sarah. Yeah, I mean,
well, what is it in your words?
What I'm saying is, look, man, I want to do something with my life, and all of these other people are saying, nah, you should just get a job in the factory, and that's like throwing your life away, and I just was responding to that. No, if you work in a factory and are having a great time, then you're better off than I am, then that's great, but I just don't want to do it.
Sunrise to sunrise.
One thing that I always thought wasn't quite addressed in the film was just that from the Super Bowl scene to the end of the movie, Mark pretty much quit drinking.
Oh, I stopped cold turkey from the Super Bowl to the Academy Awards, not a drop.
And then from the Academy Awards to the end of Coven, it was pretty much like 2 or 3 times.
Well, you know more than I do on that. I can't remember that.
And every time we got together, there was something that seemed to go wrong or did not go as planned. And he always seemed to forge ahead and go through with the project. And I think that's the best thing that I can say about his character. He's indomitable. Place you want
to be. And I'll say take two, give it a couple seconds, and you're burning in fucking hell. Move up a little bit, Robert. Okay, cool. And take two.
Yeah, Robert's a great dinner conversationalist. He's cool.
What was this scream used in?
That's for the radio show.
It's my favorite scene right here.
Take one.
Wow, that does trip me out, Mike.
That was wicked, man. Robert. Okay. Man, oh man, oh man.
Wow, this is really kind of cool right here, seeing myself, because it seems like I'm a bit relieved, like that the production is like coming to a close here, eh, Chris?
Yeah, this is, I mean, I think once we hit spring, you can really feel the home stretch.
Yeah, you might as well keep the jacket on for a few, definitely.
I think one thing that, you know, for Sarah and I, that was, not only was the schedule so intense, but since we weren't able to develop the film, we really had no idea what we were getting as we were going along. It was just really going on instincts at that point.
faces, new faces. I mean, really new faces. Who are you people?
This is one of the rare downtimes that you had during that whole time to watch the Academy Awards.
Yeah, that cool. It looks like a very warm, comfortable scene. And here I'm back in Menominee Park recording sound for me getting dragged through the swamp. My daughter Dawn helping out right there, too.
Right. For the original scene where he drags Mark through the swamp, we actually dragged him through the swamp like over 20 times, 20 or 30 times to get the take for that scene.
And actually, this guy right here was also in the Northwestern footage in the junkyard right there, and most people don't catch on to that.
Somebody made that up, you know.
Oh, it's Bill's birthday.
It's Bill's birthday.
Happy birthday, William.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Doesn't do much for me.
You look at Bill today, he was a scholar at one time, you know, but he really was. And I always looked up to him as a brother, like he had an answer for everything. I mean,
I always liked this scene because I felt like it really showed, seems like your sense of humor that you and Bill had. I don't know. It seemed,
that you shared?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I liked hanging out with him. He was cool, and I loved eating at this restaurant, man.
What are some of the influences that helped shape...
So this was actually done right at the end of filming.
This is really kind of neat to see because after going through all those trials and tribulations of making the film, all those up and downs, to see this guy here, myself, just at the home stretch, man, that's great.
You know, in the mind or in around the block or something like that.
But I liked what you were talking about in this interview is that, you know, the environment that you grew up in was about as close to the Wild West as you can get in present-day America.
Yeah, absolutely, man, and that's why I should have kept filming this stuff here with Northwestern, man. I'm still going to capture that.
College or religion or anything. There was.
But what was Northwestern supposed to be?
It was supposed to be about. It is about this writer drinking in a junkyard, having to get out of it, and get his American dream. That's what it's about, Chris. And about the culture, that embryo that he's in.
Sitting there, and my dad came over. Yeah, Pops, we need more beer. So he went and procured us some beer. came back and he, you know, drank a couple beers with us. All of a sudden, Mark's parents pulled up. my dad immediately flanked around the garage and, you know, cut through the back. He was out of there right away. Didn't want nothing to do with it. He knew what was going on, you know.
What do you think of Ken Keene?
He is a bad influence, and Mark is a bad influence for Kenny. Those two shouldn't be together.
With the parents, you know, it's Kenny Keene's fault, you know, he twisted your arm, with the other parents too, you know, and that's all bullshit because, you know, I think peer pressure is bullshit.
Where are we headed, Mark?
We're headed to jail to pick up Kenny. He'll be happy as hell. He's out in 2 minutes, man.
And how did they get him?
They were inside the house, and all of a sudden, him and his ma, the lights went off, and they went downstairs to check the fuse box, and the boys were right there waiting on them.
Who were the boys?
The detectives. They got them. Definitely. Now it's 10:04. There's the boy.
There he is.
Yep.
Now you gotta fit him in the car.
Hell yeah.
This is when you guys were picking
up Kenny.
Kenny.
Oh, sure, we got enough people involved?
Yeah, when he says that there are enough people involved, he's talking about me and Sarah were taking up the back seat with the camera and the sound equipment. If you look really closely, you can see my hand holding the back seat as I'm trying to balance myself. And then, as Mike moves over, his foot hits the gas pedal and it takes off.
This is entering into the home stretch where this was sort of chaotic filming. Those guys were staying up all the time, staying up overnight, working. Chris and I had to do the same thing. Again, we weren't able to watch what we had because we never processed the film until after we were done shooting, and we couldn't listen to what we had because there was no time. So we were all pretty much running on empty.
Right, and we got Coven finally edited 5 hours before it was due to play at the Times Theater.
What a lot of people don't understand in this film is that, you know, in a normal production, you would need this time to get it sent to the lab and get it developed, but what where Mark was working, they could develop Reversal right down the street. And so the university that he was working at, they had this ability, they had a processor for 16mm black and white Reversal. And so Mark, they were able to work right up into the deadline, make the print, and actually get it developed within like an hour or two, and actually get it back for the screening.
Up tomorrow, Mark. I'll be back.
Yeah, and this also was some of the darkest periods of my life where I just thought that the film wasn't going to be done on time, and it was a whole disaster, man.
When you swing here, swing in the middle. Just this is the last one. This is the last one we got, man. Hold up, man. Where's
this? This is back at the junkyard where you were shooting Northwestern.
Yep. Years and years and years ago.
Action.
Yeah, I kept hitting that thing, and it just action. Wouldn't break.
Take 14. Action.
I'm hitting it as hard as I can. It's not
okay,
nothing.
There's one other thing. Mike, come down here real quick. I got to get the headlights. Knock out.
The other thing is, while they were editing, it was one of the most difficult periods for Sarah and I, because it was for the most time, it was really boring, just because it was people sitting at flatbeds or rewinds and not doing anything. But whenever we wouldn't be there, something would happen. And so what we ended up finding out is that we just had to hang out for hours and hours and hours just in case, on the off chance, something would happen. You know, there was a few exciting things, but they were so few and far between. But again, it's our job to capture what was happening. We felt an obligation to try to be there as much as we could.
And especially without getting in the way of Mark and what right. he was trying to do.
But you guys were sleeping down there pretty full time at that.
Yeah, we were living down there. We even had a thing to cook with and all of that stuff.
I think I saw you made macaroni and cheese and a little hot plate or something.
Yeah, all of that stuff, man.
Do you have a couple rusty cars parked right?
Yeah, this is what I can't wait to see when I get back home again, man, is all of this stuff right here. This stuff really exists, man.
These guys are decaying, you know? And that's what it's all about.
Is this a landscape that you want to try to capture?
No, that I am going to capture.
But then within that is the warmth of the soul.
It's going to be cool.
And this is when you were location scouting with your mom.
You got it.
Houses and cars.
And they would drive around, and so we just went with them this one day when Mark would drive around with his mom. They'd take pictures of all these different locations. So then this is back at the cemetery 6 months later, and pretty self-explanatory, but just showing the seasons changed. This is actually probably my favorite scene in the film, just this, the way the music and everything combines here, and especially on film, this is so pretty.
Well, I just want to add that, like, driving around with my ma, the idea behind that is like hanging out with Mike. They're both mellow people, and they don't try to get you into situations or make demands. They allow you to do whatever you want, and then you still have, like, companionship, man. So that's why I feel comfortable with that.
Make sure we don't lock anyone in.
Yeah, man, I went through a bunch of jobs, man. The factory, the farm, cemetery, all of that stuff.
Over here, there's a river. And
all to wind up absolutely nowhere.
This has been going on now, literally, for 3 years. A Thursday night's opening will be just 10 days shy of 3 years. But through all of this...
3 years doesn't seem like a long time, but it does. I mean, at the time.
When you're
the time
living,
it was long.
It does.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, that's you skateboarding.
Yeah, yeah, that's that kid if I could try his skateboard.
And they were always just hanging out. It's the type of thing that they were. You edit in the basement right down there in those windows that are all blacked out. And just was... You had to get air.
Yep.
So they'd come up here.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah?
Mike, dude, what's the up? Flyers, man.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Hey, no, dude, where are you walking? I mean, we got...
I'm walking in there to hang around strategically.
You need flyers, man.
I know, that's why I'm asking you for them.
No, that's why I'm giving you them. All right, now listen, dude. So you and Matt, man, make it look
it's
good,
Matt, who,
make it look
at
sharp.
At the beginning
I know
of the film was the casting director for Northwestern. And now he's back to help put up the flyers.
And actually, Matt was down there working on his film while Mark was editing. We'd filmed him doing the production, but we also filmed him down there editing. But it just was, again, another tangent that just didn't quite
we're
make
in the
it.
Union, and we put the flyers on top of a bunch of...
Yeah, Mike, I still question, what happened? You guys just put the flyers down on the papers, or what?
The
we put them on, I guess we put the flyers on some papers, and some guy, like he's saying, came in to replace the newspapers that we set the flyers on top of, and he took all our flyers along with the newspapers.
I mean, well, what do you think about that? I mean, that's crazy.
Well, that's the way it happened, though.
Did you guys make any effort to retrieve those flyers?
We couldn't. We didn't know where the guy was, you know.
It happened when they weren't looking.
It happened. It just happened real fast.
The funny thing is we didn't even see it happen.
No, we were out following them around.
In the process of taking down over 1,400 flags.
Yeah, visually this was, you couldn't ask for anything more than this. It's like, how many flags?
Yeah, about 1,500, man. There was a lot.
I was called to the bathroom at the cemetery to take care of something. I walked in the bathroom, and in the middle toilet right there.
Oh, yeah, just to supplement this in the Army, man. I had to clean up somebody's puke, man, off the toilet.
They shat on the walls. They shat on the floor. I had to clean it up, man. But before that, for about 10 to 15 seconds, man, I just stared at somebody's shit, man. To be totally honest with you, man, it was a really, really profound moment. So I was thinking, I'm 30 years old.
Anyway, so the
about 10 seconds.
Back to the our editing schedule. Basically, when we got the film finished shooting, we got everything developed, and pretty much spent 2 years editing. And basically, what that consisted of was something like that last day at the cemetery. We'd make a sequence out of it. We divided the whole movie into these sequences, and then put them in chronological order, and then just tried to shape it until it started becoming the movie that you see here.
That took 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it'd be a famous movie.
But again, it's like once those sequences were all lined up, it was around 4 hours of material, and then it was really just starting to take things out that felt repetitive or redundant. But there was also a lot of great footage. It just didn't work with the thrust of the narrative, and so that stuff got, you know, pushed out. But again, hopefully it'll be included on the DVD or on the internet, or it'll find a home somewhere. And that was actually one of my, I think, favorite shots, cinematic, you know, just the way that it looks. It was a close lens, and it was a really shallow depth of field, and I always thought that looked really great. Disaster happened,
so now I'm just. Mark, you should go into this just a little bit more to explain that you were sort of A/B rolling your.
Yeah.
The film that you shot was its original.
This was the original negative.
This was a completely critical disaster because I was using what we were doing now is getting ready to cut the original film. And that precisely has to be cut frame by frame. And someone cut off one frame from each shot. And that would have threw the soundtrack. It would a complete disaster. I mean, this is critical. It's not. So I'd end up having to tape splice some shots, which is something you don't want to do. Man, I just felt my world crash down when I heard that news.
And I think we showed up like 20 minutes after it had happened, and they're like, oh, man, you should talk to Mark.
No.
And this, like most of the interviews, was done right at the end, just because it was at a point where it was the final interviews, and I think everybody, it was just our way of having some closure to everything, where we let everybody say their final comments. But that goes for the interview there with the kids, with Mark's brother Chris, and with his dad.
A lot of the interviews that are sort of interwoven.
We're kind of done in hindsight, just
right.
So that, kind of looking back on the whole process. And that was the room that you guys slept in a lot.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be done in about less than an hour, and
I don't think we lit any of these rooms, did we? For the most part, we were falling from room to room.
Right.
Using natural lighting.
Well, this was like all fluorescent lighting, so we just went with what was there, just because originally, I think on the first time we filmed in the editing room, we actually tried to light it, but the amount of time that took just would have been prohibitive for us to actually film the way that we were filming. And so after that point, we just went with what was there. And like in scenes like this, I remember, you know, there were these little
track lights.
And so we just jumped up on a table and aimed them at them. But a lot of times it was really using available light or using the light that was in the immediate vicinity and trying to use that to our advantage or as best as we could.
This was a great turnout on the Coven premiere there. It was sold out. They had to turn 75 people away.
Yeah, it was like a 400-seat theater, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really tired and a little bit tipsy here, so I was just really out of it.
Well, you had been up for how long at that point?
Yeah, I mean, it was... Actually, I was working from 10 in the morning till 4 in the morning just to cut 900 shots together. It was nuts.
There I am. So I was recording and doing boom and the whole time, and Chris is filming.
Yeah, I don't smoke cigarettes. I don't even know what that was doing in my mouth.
It's all right, man. Those are tickets that you're selling now.
I was wondering.
Well, you happy now?
Bill wasn't feeling too good at that time.
Nope, he's toward the end of his road.
When I hear the projector rolling and I see Kevin on the screen,
yeah.
It was nice to see everybody come together, though, here. His mother came and Kenny's parents came. And
yep. Yeah, that was great.
What did your mom think of COVID, Mike?
My mom just didn't like the swearing in it. She liked the movie, but she just didn't like the swearing in it.
But don't your mom swear?
Yeah, my mom swears up a storm, actually. Yeah.
This we always love the beginning, because in the beginning of our film, you're talking about the scarecrows and the sound, wow, and then here's where you actually get to see it. What did Bill think about his name being last?
No, I don't know if he even had any comment on it.
No, he did. He said Mark was like, he liked seeing your name up there, and Bill was, he was like, yeah, but it was last. And he thought that was the least important.
He said, that's where the most important name goes, man.
Okay, there's something to live for. Jesus told me so.
How's the writing going?
How's it going? It's going fine.
Is it?
Hey, did I stutter, man? I said it's coming along fine.
So this was actually really kind of a difficult thing to cut down, because we didn't want it to play like a trailer, but we didn't want it to confuse people and make them think that this was the entire film. And so I just felt like, you know, I just felt like this was a good representation of all the different scenes that Mark had filmed. And hopefully would get people interested to see what Coven was, but also, you know, that it showed some talent in the way that the images were put together and composed and everything.
Well, thank you, Chris and Sarah.
What did you think of this sequence, Mark?
I thought it was pretty good. I would have edited it slightly different, but each to his own, right? But
yeah.
You did a good job, you guys.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. Again, it's like we were, during the editing process, we were really kind of separate. You were doing your thing out, and we were working so much. We were working, you know, 16-hour days on editing. And in hindsight, I think it would have been... I remember showing it to you and getting your approval on it, but at the same time, it would have been something that would have been probably better to work on together.
This, we hired a spotlight for our own purposes to shine it on the front, because we wanted it to be... We didn't quite know how to light this whole theater. And,
it was extremely dark.
Extremely dark, so we had a spotlight so we could get some light. I was down in front trying to get sound.
You can see Sarah's boom on the bottom left-hand corner of the screen.
But I had a mic on him doing the boom and a mic on in the crowd. Two cameras, too.
I think she stands up right here.
Well, I never saw that before.
Yeah, I don't know what's that either.
Yeah, I see it every time. And it's not bad. It's just...
I had to go up and clap.
Right.
For both cameras, as our sync point.
Right. No, it doesn't bother me. It's just something that I noticed. Because
yeah.
It's the only thing moving in the frame. So this was after... This is right at the very end, too, where we took Mike to the zoo.
I hope all the best for Mark. He works hard. And he has a lot of dreams. And I hope they come through.
I hate seeing those mics, but... Sometimes your mom just was starting to talk. We just had to put something on her.
accomplished, whatever. God told me so.
So this was the last. This was right near the end as well. It was like, you know, we did these last interviews, and this was the last trip to Bill's.
Next movie?
Sure.
Good. $40,000 to $50,000.
Well, I'm glad you captured this on film, because I think that's a cool moment, man.
Come true.
My dreams. What dreams are that? Is that?
What's your American dream?
I don't have any dreams anymore.
Yeah, we always felt like this scene was Bill sort of channeling something in, and as Chris used to always say, that it's He's telling you how to live a life.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, you're going to sit down and buy a green grass. Well, not this in particular, but the one that comes up.
Yeah. Man, let me tell you
something. No, I remember this was the only time in watching the entire amount of raw footage that it actually kind of knocked me off my feet was not this right here, but just when Bill goes into this final soliloquy of it was the only time that I really got emotionally set back in the sense that I remembered so much of what we shot, but I really didn't remember, this didn't stick out to me the way that it does now, and I remember just kind of tearing up and just because I hadn't, we had already gone to Bill's funeral at this point. It was maybe like a week or two after the funeral, and then hearing this, it just kind of it gave it a whole different meaning to me.
As long as you can, heaven help you, God help you, Jesus help you, everybody else help you, everybody make happy. Make everybody happy. Be a community.
Pretty great philosophy, though.
Yep, it's cool.
This is another nice thing. It's that after when Bill died, I think everybody that was involved in the film, including Sarah, myself, and everyone that was in it, showed up at the funeral, and it gave it a sense of closure where we all got to remember Bill but also get together one last time before that was right when we were starting to edit.
Yeah, if you think about it, there are a lot of kind of what could be termed as mythological things going on as you watch this.
Well, I do. I think that we caught you at a pretty amazing time. If you 2 years earlier you were kind of not getting that much done, and 2 years later you would have been, Bill would have been passed on, and that whole relationship wouldn't have been there. So
yeah. So anyway, all of these people who have helped with the film, especially like with my film and that too, I just got to say thanks, because it's thanks also to their perseverance and sticking with it that really made Coven work.
And same on our end. It's, especially with an independent film, you have so many people that are helping with, it isn't the type of thing where you're paying people as you go along. It's just everybody's getting involved because they want to help you out. But we had so many... I mean, it was primarily myself and Sarah for the shooting of the film, but in editing there was, I think, 7 of us involved, which you see listed there. There was
at various times
there were people that helped do some boom and everything. It's there's no way we could have done it alone.
Yeah, it's really neat too. I never knew who Mr. Bojangles was either until Mark took me to a film that had Mr. Bojangles in it. I found out he's this black dude that tap dance, which is cool with me, because it's like I had been playing this song ever since I was like 10 years old,
Thanks to everybody who helped on the film. That's what these credits are for.
Thanks to Chris and Sarah for making the film.
Yeah, thanks to them and Uncle Bill and everybody else who helped along, man.
And thanks to Mark's family and friends for letting us in their lives for 2 years.
Right across the cell, he grabbed his pants, took a better stance, jumped up high. That's when he clicked his heels. Then he let go a laugh. Lord, he let go a laugh. Shook back his clothes all around. That was Mr. Bojangles.
other times he worked for minstrel shows.